Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports, right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. Joined in studio today by Vinny Rondinelli. Vinny, kind enough to join us each week to co-host the show. Vinny, there's a lot to get into today, including the NFL, a lot going on in college as well. Last night, we have the second edition of the college football playoff rankings. You're a football guy. Now's the time of the year for it.
Yeah, this is what, you know, you wait for. Is it's the end of the season, college football playoffs. You're seeing the NFL kind of sort themselves out now. The division races are kind of, you can tell who's pulling away and who's falling off. So it's an exciting time. This is when football gets the best.
Well, we are on the eve of week 10 of the NFL season. Tomorrow night, right here on KOAL, we get the Carolina Panthers and the Pittsburgh Steelers Thursday night football. A big improvement from what we had last Thursday, no doubt. To get us set up for week 10, there is some news that broke earlier today. Dez Bryant is back in the NFL, and he's joining one of the league's top Super Bowl contenders, arguably the hottest team in the league, in the New Orleans Saints, who are fresh off of a victory over the Los Angeles Rams. They've won 7 consecutive games, and now Dez Bryant on the opposite side of Michael Thomas. Your initial thoughts when you heard this today?
I think he's a piece player for Peyton. Peyton's looking for something exactly. I think he wanted a big physical presence to go with Michael Thomas, because I think the red zone is something they wanted to improve on. I think the other day they were 5-for-5 against the LA Rams. And, you know, that's probably an NFC Championship preview, unless there's an injury or something crazy. Those are probably the two teams playing to go to the Super Bowl. So I think he was looking for something in particular, Dez Bryant. Dez Bryant can still muscle his way into the end zone. Dez Bryant can go high point of football. You know, they got speed. The speedster in the offense is Kamara anyways.
Right.
Yeah, so Michael Thomas has been basically unstoppable this year. He's been amazing. What, he has 70 catches already?
Yeah, 70 catches already this season.
Oh, yeah, it's unbelievable pace. So I think Dez Bryant is a piece player for a special package for Drew Brees in a moment for the playoffs. And I like it.
I don't mind it. You know, it's look, this is the way I view it, okay? So we're a week after the trade deadline. We saw Houston, and look, I think it is time to consider Houston at least a semi-contender coming out of the AFC, the way they've been playing.
Absolutely. I think they win the division, yeah, no doubt.
Right. So Houston had to give up assets to go out and get Demaryius Thomas, and you and I both agreed last week he's not the same Demaryius Thomas.
No.
And this was a Band-Aid for losing Will Fuller, right?
Right.
New Orleans didn't make any moves. They didn't give up any assets. I mean, the Rams trade for Dante Fowler. We saw the Eagles make a trade for Golden Tate. They didn't give up any assets. And they're bringing in, I don't want to call them a bandit. I'm going to call them a niche player for this particular team. That's why I don't mind it. They're not giving up anything.
No, they're not giving anything. They're 7-1. They're on a hot streak anyways. And that's a strong locker room. I don't think that Dez Bryant gets to have an outburst, because Sean Payton and Drew Brees are going to be pretty much putting that's not going to last. And I think they made that perfectly clear to him. I think this, like you said, he's a niche player. He's a role player. I think he's still a big physical guy. I don't think that there's, I think there's some gas left in his tank. He's going to be a third option in New Orleans. You know, Michael Thomas and Kamara are going to be 1 and 2. So he doesn't have to do a lot anyways, Jordan. He's lucky if he's going to get 3 targets a game. Like you said,
Cameron Meredith hasn't received a single target over the last 3 games.
Yeah,
so
he's not going to get a ton, and he's not going to get double covered.
He's a red zone target, right?
Yeah, he's not going to get double covered. They're not going to roll coverage to him. He's not going to be a focal point for defensive coordinators. So it's a good fit, I think, on both ends. You're right. And like you said, you don't have to give nothing up. If it doesn't work, you got cap space. He was a veteran minimum contract, I believe. I don't think he got much out of I don't think there's many dollars involved.
No.
So what do you lose? If he doesn't work out, you don't lose anything.
30 years old, been on the open market since, boy, it's been close to a year, hasn't it?
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
It has.
Yeah, he hasn't really had much.
He hasn't had any continuity with it, or he hasn't been around the NFL game. So I am curious to see what Dez brings to the table. I got to believe that he's definitely in shape. Is he in football shape? No, there's no way he's going to be in football shape. I guess the biggest question is, they did go out, they got Eli Apple. That was last month, was not at the trade deadline. Are you concerned about bringing in someone like Dez Bryant? From a locker room standpoint, knowing
not
that you may be
in
an
that
NFC
locker
contender.
Room. Those are strong personalities. Michael Thomas is a strong personality. Drew Brees is a big time leader. Cameron Jordan on the other side is a big time leader. Sean Payton, you know, he come from Bill Parcells. He's an in your face kind of guy. I don't think that Dez Bryant's going to have any room to act out on this football team, because, like you said, it's a minimum investment. He's not going to be a focal point of their offense. So I think, if they don't feel he's a perfect fit, he's down the road. And I think they'll make it that decision in a hurry.
He will play the Cowboys week 13, Thursday Night Football.
That'll be very interesting. And what if he outplays Amari Cooper?
I mean, really, let's be real here. If we take a look at what Dez Bryant has done over the last two seasons, okay, he had three straight years where he went over 1,200 yards.
Yeah.
Had at least 12 touchdowns. Okay, Amari Cooper was a 1,000-yard receiver just 3 years ago. Okay, and I know, look, I can't compare the two from an age perspective, but the production for Dez Bryant, he was held under 1,000 yards his last two seasons. Amari Cooper's been held under 1,000 yards his last two seasons as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, what if he outplays him? I mean, Drew Brees is going to, or, you know, Mickey Loomis down there, the GM in New Orleans, is going to be winking at Jerry Jones like, hey, bud, the guy I got for nothing just outplayed your first-round pick.
Is he better than Tre'Quan Smith? Would you rather? Okay.
Yes.
So Dez is the number two then in New Orleans. Smith is number three. So now I asked this question today. I was talking to someone about this. The Cowboys' offense is pitiful. And I don't want to make this another slamming session on the Dallas Cowboys because we talked about them yesterday. But this offense is horrible. They should have been up 17-0 Monday night on Tennessee when it was 7-7. Okay. 17-24-0, whatever. When you look at what Dez Bryant, I mean, you're saying that he could be a valuable piece for this Saints squad. Does it make it all that much worse knowing that he could be wearing a Cowboys uniform right now?
Yeah, especially with the struggles they've had. You know, they needed help. They needed weapons. They needed somebody. Maybe the personality. I would tend to think that Dak Prescott and him had some sort of issue. I think that's the only reason, because there's no way that you can replace a guy. He can still play. And that offense is terrible. You're right. They're terrible.
It's awful.
They're terrible.
It's horrible. Now, the question I guess I have for Dez Bryant is, how are the Saints going to use him? Because later on in his tenure with the Cowboys, he was using the slot. And as I'm watching the Saints over the last 3 weeks, that's what this team lacks offensively. There's not a solid slot option for this team. Ted Ginn could have been that guy.
Could have been that guy.
Before
he gets
going
hurt.
In the IR.
Kamara, you know, he takes some of those routes, you know, like Marshall Faulk used to do.
And he has to because he can now. I shouldn't say he has to, but he can now because you got Mark Ingram back.
Yeah, he can. He can come out of the backfield. If they put them both in backfield, he can motion into the slot and do that. So, yeah, that would be interesting to see. I think they see him as a big physical guy. I think they're special matchups. Payton's one of those offensive wizards, much like your guy, McVay. I think he was looking for a specific chess piece for a couple of his moves. You know, like, again, low risk. There's not a lot of money involved. You didn't have to give anything up. So he was looking for a chess piece. I think he's got him, and I think he has some plays in mind for him, 10 to 15, 20 snaps a game, 2-3 targets a game, and to help him do something that he's missing that he thinks he needs.
I'll bring up one more idea here, and I wouldn't be surprised if this happens at all. We saw the Patriots go out and grab Michael Floyd late last year. And
yep.
I thought, okay, this could be a good spot for him. And I feel the same way with Dez Bryant. He was inactive through most of the playoffs, if I remember correctly. He wasn't even on the active roster for the Super Bowl. Would you be surprised if that was the same thing with Dez Bryant?
No.
We see him for 4 or 5 weeks. He's not active.
Yeah,
on this team
I could see that. If this doesn't fit perfectly, he would become a total depth player. Again, low risk, not a lot of money involved. So, yeah, I could see him being a healthy scratch in a week that they don't have something for him. Now, that wouldn't surprise me one bit.
We'll talk more NFL a little bit later on in the show. We have to talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers again. They play the Carolina Panthers tomorrow. It's being reported Le'Veon Bell is, in fact, back in Pittsburgh, meaning that we may see Le'Veon Bell sooner rather than later. Is that a good idea? I don't know. And again, we'll have this conversation a little bit later. I don't know if I want that guy around my football team.
I wouldn't want him there.
seriously, James Conner's been just fine.
And James Conner's been fine. They've caught fire and they've won four in a row. Is it four in a row or three in a row? Conner's been 3 weeks in a row, dynamite. And well, Le'Veon Bell, we don't need you. We don't need the headache.
That's four games in a row. Like you said, they're 5-2-1 right now at the top of that division. So we'll talk a little bit more NFL later on in the show. We briefly talked about this yesterday, and I am not even remotely surprised because I did research and I tried to logically figure out what in the hell was happening, and I couldn't figure this out. Now, I know you and I have talked boxing and combat sports before. You saw the news about Floyd Mayweather fighting in Japan on New Year's Eve.
Yes.
And that's no longer a go. It's been canceled.
Really?
It's been canceled.
Okay.
We had this conversation yesterday, and I again, for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why this guy would go. It was going to be on the card for Rizin, which I guess is like a third-tier fighting promotion in Japan. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is a guy that gets pulled out of retirement for nine-figure fights. He fought Conor McGregor, made $200 million. You know, he fight Manny Pacquiao. He fights Pacquiao. He gets $200 million. Like, this is why this guy's coming out of retirement. What could this third-tier promotion company possibly offer this guy? Floyd puts out on his Instagram today that he was basically bamboozled by this fight promotion. Here's the quote. "Now that I'm back on U.S. soil after a long and disappointing trip to Tokyo, I now have time to address you, my fans, and the media in regard to the upcoming event on December 31st. First and foremost, I want it to be clear that I never agreed to an official bout with Tenshin Nasukawa. In fact, I've never even heard of him up until this trip." Floyd continues to say that basically he had agreed to do an exhibition in Japan for the promotion in front of, quote, a few wealthy spectators. These exhibitions happen all the time. Remember when Mitt Romney went toe-to-toe with Evander Holyfield?
Yeah.
A select few got in to see that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Floyd said that that's what he was expecting. They didn't tell him who he was going to fight. They just said against one of their fighters. He gets to Tokyo. They make the announcement it's going to be on pay-per-view. It's going to be on December 31st. And all I can say is this promotion company has flat-out stones to try to pull something like this off. I actually tip my hat to him. I'm buying what Floyd's saying, but I tip my hat to the promotion company because that's the only, realistically, it's the only way you're going to get a star like Floyd Mayweather to come to your promotion.
Yeah, they got a lot of, that's the perfect word. They got a lot of stones pulling this one off. and of course, it wanted to be December 31st. So they got to hustle this through.
Right.
They got to hustle this through. If anybody finds out about this, it's going to be bad. So, yeah, that's funny because I did see a snippet when I was on the internet that Mayweather was going to fight, but I was thinking to myself, well, what?
Why would you do this? It didn't make sense. And I said this on the show yesterday. I asked Travis, would you buy it? And he said, yeah, I'd pay $30 to watch this. And again, even then I said, but $30, you sell 100 million pay-per-views, at $30. How is Floyd making money off of this? He's fighting for a promotion. It just did not make sense to me. He addressed his reaction at the press conference. He said that he was blindsided by it, and for the sake of the fans and attendees that flew in for the press conference, he was hesitant to create a huge disturbance. Like I said, I'm buying what Floyd is saying, and I tip my hat to Rizin because they nearly pulled something off.
They almost had something. If Magic had signed it, you know, they could have had a breach of contract. They could have stole some money from him.
I mean, they
almost got something out of this.
And to Floyd's credit, you don't want to be the bearer of bad news in Japan at a press conference.
Oh, no. No, you want to just get back on the plane,
get
out of there, and then just call somebody and say, come on, dude. Are you serious with this? I mean, you know what? These exhibitions, it makes me think back to, like, Rocky Balboa.
And Thunder Lips.
And Hulk Hogan and Stallone doing the thing for fun.
But I know that these exhibitions happen under the radar where the media doesn't know. And again, a few wealthy spectators. Yeah, this happens quite often. It's an exhibition.
It's a fundraiser, more or less, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's what it is. And I think that's what Floyd thought he was getting into. Not the case, and it's been called off. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA tonight because we have action on KOAL tonight. The Utah Jazz will take on the Dallas Mavericks. Start time for this game is set for 7 p.m. Live coverage will begin at 6:50. Utah trying to end a four-game losing skid. Remember back in the day when the Jazz had true home court advantage at the Delta Center? Now it's Vivint Smart Home Arena. They're 0-4 at home. I can't recall the last time this has happened. The Jazz will try to end that skid against the Mavericks. They have struggled 0-5 away from home. The Jazz 0-4 at home, so something's got to give tonight. Games begin in the 5 o'clock hour. We get Cleveland playing host to the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Detroit Pistons will travel on the road to meet the Orlando Magic. The Atlanta Hawks will welcome in the New York Knicks, and we get San Antonio at Miami. All of those games inside 5 o'clock. 6 o'clock tonight, 76ers at the Pacers. The Grizzlies will welcome in the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets right now 9-1, second best record in the Western Conference, just behind the win column to the Golden State Warriors. Also at 6 o'clock, we get the Bulls and the Pelicans. 8 o'clock tonight, the Kings play host to the Raptors. And on national TV tonight, we get the Timberwolves and the Lakers. The Lakers made it official today by signing Tyson Chandler, who was bought out of his contract by the Phoenix Suns. So far this year, the Lakers have struggled. They're at 4-6, Minnesota at 4-7, LeBron averaging just under 27 points per contest. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports scene. We've got a break for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk college football. The second edition of the playoff rankings were released yesterday. Who controls their own destiny? We'll talk about that when we return. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. We will begin with junior college athletics, and USU Eastern is currently in search of a new athletic director. Chelsea Warburton, who has held the spot for the last couple of years, has stepped down from the position. Warburton is also the head coach of the women's basketball team, and she will remain in that role. In the meantime, the interim athletic director will be USU Eastern Vice Chancellor Greg Dart, who was recently a guest on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, and he talked about his current position.
Kind of a sad thing, but a good thing for her is that Chelsea Warburton, who served very admirably as our athletic director for the last year and a half, but also serves as our head women's basketball coach, and has then also started as a graduate student and doing a master's degree, felt like that might be a little too much on her plate. And so she stepped down from the athletic director role.
Dart anticipates that the job will be filled within the coming weeks.
It leaves us needing an athletic director. So I stepped in as in the interim role as we try and determine what our next steps will be. And then we expect some kind of announcement here in the next few weeks of what will be happening with the athletic director role. I can tell you I'm not the long-term solution.
You can listen to this complete interview by visiting castlecountryradio.com. Just click on the Drive Time Sports link in the right-hand corner. We move over to high school basketball. And while the season is still a couple of weeks away, Carbon boys and girls basketball team will hold a skills camp for youth tomorrow, November 8th, at Carbon High School. The camp will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. The cost to attend is $25 per participant, and it's for boys and girls in grades 4 through 8. You'll have an opportunity to learn basketball skills from Carbon High School's boys and girls basketball coaches and along with team philosophies. This camp is something that is held yearly. The money will impact both the Carbon boys and girls basketball squads. And again, the camp will begin at 6 to 8 p.m. We take a look at events taking place in the Castle Country area. And the North Springs Archery Club is holding a 2018-2019 indoor schedule for leagues. Now, this event will take place from 5 to 8 p.m. It'll go on November 13th and 20th, December 11th and 18th. Once a week in January, once a week in February, and once a week in March. The cost is $8 per night for the ages of 18 and over, $5 per night for the ages 12 to 17. 11 and under will be free. League membership will be $20 per person or $50 per family. For more information on the North Springs Archery Club leagues, contact Adam Bedant at 650-0721. That's 650-0721. Also taking place, it's Blitzball. This will be a league that will begin in January of 2019. It's an 8-week schedule, and it's $100 for a 5-person team. This particular league will be held courtesy of Carbon Rec. You can find more information by visiting carbonrec.com. And we end by moving over to the national sports scene. And tonight on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the Utah Jazz will look to end their lengthy losing skid as they play host to the Dallas Mavericks at 7 p.m. Only 9 games into the season, the Jazz currently have the 10th best record in the Western Conference. Utah, after getting off to a hot start, has now lost 4 consecutive games. Again, tonight's start time is set for 7 p.m. David Locke and Ron Boone will bring you live pregame coverage beginning at 6:50. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Beagles.
Let's talk some college football here on Drive Time Sports. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. I'm Jordan Buscarini alongside Vinny Rondinelli. Second college football playoff rankings were released yesterday. There were no surprises. We did have a surprise during week one. LSU was the number three team in the country, and I thought a lot of that was a farce. It was due for marketing, so we could say it was one versus three as far as Alabama and LSU goes. Top four, if the playoffs were to begin today, Alabama would take on Michigan. That's 1-4. Clemson, Notre Dame at 4-3. Vinny, any problems with the way the top four is set
absolutely.
Right now?
The top four seemed easy to me. It was a no-brainer.
It was simple.
Yeah, it was simple. It really was.
And as far as 2-3 goes, you could make a case, but it doesn't matter. 2-3 is interchangeable because you got to play anyway.
Exactly.
So it does
just
not matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So really, after number one, which is usually pretty easy for everybody.
I think so,
most years, number one's there.
Yeah.
So 2-3 is another one. But the one that always, for me, that's always the controversial one is one's easy, 2-3 are interchangeable, like you say, the fourth team.
And that has been the big controversy.
Yeah,
the
fourth team
right.
is always, you know, an uproar.
Well, and look, for those who want to extend it to eight, then nine's going to be an uproar.
Yeah, nine's going to be an uproar. Right. I think it should be eight anyways, but you're right. The same thing will happen. Nine will be the uproar. But, you know, 1-4 is easy to pick it out. Alabama the other night, especially after the 1-3, like you said, that's a publicity stunt. But it's a primetime game, SEC game. You know, there's that feeling the SEC is so dominant. Alabama come out and just, wow.
Yeah, they looked the part.
Wow.
I did not think that Alabama was not the best team in the country. I wasn't ready to crown them based on the fact they hadn't played anyone.
That's true.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I wanted to see Tua play in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I wanted to see them go up against legit competition.
You wanted to see him overcome
right.
something.
Or have to play someone that can bring something to the table.
Right.
Up until that point, it was just Texas A&M, who's not a very good team defensively
to
begin with. So, yeah, okay, I got everything I needed, you know, as far as Alabama goes. I agree. Number one team in the country. Clemson, Notre Dame, 2-3. I'm not arguing there. Michigan at 4. I agree with it, but here's the thing. 1, 2, and 3... control their own destiny. Does 4 control their own destiny? This is the question. And what I mean by that, look, if you're 9-0 Alabama, 9-0 Clemson, 9-0 Notre Dame, all you have to do is win out. You're not going to drop.
Right.
Okay, Notre Dame still has Syracuse, who's a top 15 team. Notre Dame controls their own destiny.
Absolutely.
Okay, Clemson is going to win the ACC. If they win out, they are going to the college football playoff. They control their own destiny. Bama's 1 in the country. They went out. They were 1 before they played anyone of any significance. They
right.
control their own destiny. Does Michigan control their own destiny?
I believe they do. If they went out, that means they're going to have a title. They don't have a conference title game.
They do.
They do.
They do in the Big Ten.
Big Ten. Is it Big 12?
Big 12. They do now as well. So
Big 12, too. So, yeah, Michigan, especially because if Notre Dame wins out, they're the 3 team in the country. You can say opening week, Michigan took them to the end. They didn't get blown out. They played well on the road in Notre Dame. They're a 1-loss team. It's pretty simple. They really do control their own destiny. If they win out, they're going to stay at 4. Especially if the top 3 teams, you know, the top 2 aren't going to move. You know that Alabama, who's going to knock them off?
They're going to have to beat Georgia.
They'll have to beat themselves. Same thing with Clemson, Virginia Tech, or ACC. They're going to have to beat themselves. You know, they're not going to get straight up beat. So Notre Dame, they went out. Yeah, Michigan, if they went out, same thing. They're going to say, hey, we lost to the 3 team in the country on the road opening day, and we didn't get blown out. We showed. So I think they control their own destiny.
So?
I really do.
They still have Ohio State as well. Don't forget that.
Right.
They still have to beat Ohio State. And right
and if
now,
they win
Ohio
out,
State
yeah, they're.
Eight.
I mean, that's another good win. That's a good football team.
Ohio State's had trouble,
but that's a good football team.
I agree. So Michigan does control their own destiny. Okay. You have to believe that Georgia controls their own destiny at this stage in the game as well, right? I mean, they're 8-1, and taking a look, I don't care who Georgia lost to. And they lost to LSU, a team that lost handedly to Alabama, right? Okay, so, but looking at it, Georgia, to run the table, would have to beat Alabama. So this is a team that controls their own destiny right now as a number five seed, right?
Yeah, they really do, because if they run it, they would win the SEC title game against Alabama. And you know the voters are going to love the SEC champ.
Okay, so this is why I don't think Michigan controls
their
own destiny.
That's a good point. You can look at it at a different angle.
Right.
So,
and what I'm saying is a one-loss SEC champion, Georgia, gets in over a one-loss Big Ten champion in Michigan, regardless of who Michigan beats out from this point on, because of how highly the committee
thinks of Bama. So Alabama would be the fourth team?
I think so. Or, you know what? They would split up Georgia and Bama. They would find a way to split them up. So I could see Clemson becoming number one, Georgia being four, Bama being two or three, to split up the SEC in the opening round.
That'd be tough.
But that's why I don't believe Michigan controls their own destiny. If Georgia wins out, the SEC will get two teams in.
That's tough.
You're going to leave a one-loss Alabama team out if they lose in the SEC championship game? Would you leave them out? They didn't last year. Didn't even play for the division. Didn't even play for their conference championship, and they got in.
Yeah, and then they won.
And they won the national championship.
They won the national championship.
That's why I don't believe Michigan. I don't believe they control their own
destiny. Yeah, and when you look at it like that, you're right. That's a good point. You know, for them, that would be tough. Wouldn't that be something?
That'd be an uproar. We need controversy.
That would be an uproar.
You need controversy.
That would be a major uproar, and Harbaugh would have a major point with that. You know, he's beaten some good teams, and for them to be a conference champion and get left out against a team that's not didn't win their conference.
Well, let me tell you what else could cause the massive uproar, okay? Say, and I know this is a lot has to happen for this to happen, okay? But say Georgia does win the SEC. Let's say that Bama finishes the season with one loss and it's in the SEC championship, and nothing that I've seen in the past leads me to believe that they'll leave Bama out if they have one loss. They'll get in. And I do believe that Bama, even if they were to lose to Georgia, I would still believe they're one of the top four teams in the country.
Absolutely.
But based on the criteria, they should not get in if they don't
win. Based on that, and let's be honest, they are a better football team than Georgia. If they lose, it's because they beat themselves. They helped. And that should be accounted for. Teams, you know, people tend to forget that. Well, it's the SEC championship game. They're the better team. If they lose, they lost to a team they were better than. So that should be accounted for. I think that maybe they should be left out.
Well, I would agree with you. I'm just
what
saying
if Oklahoma throws this whole thing over? What if Ohio State beats Michigan?
And then you have a one-loss Oklahoma team
Alabama beats Georgia. What about there? Who's number four then? Does Ohio State get in? You know, the voters. You know,
at that point,
let me ask you this. Honestly, okay. they're human beings.
Right.
The playoff voters are human beings. Does Urban Meyer's early season headlines, say they win their conference championship as one loss, and so does Lincoln Riley, so does Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really think, who do you think the voters are going to vote for?
Well, I'll tell you who they should vote for if that happens. If it was to come down to a one-loss Ohio State team and a one-loss Oklahoma team, Oklahoma should get the nod. And I'll tell you why Oklahoma should get the nod. They lost a three-point rivalry game to a ranked Texas squad. Ranked Texas squad.
Huge rivalry game,
middle of the season, conference contest.
Yes.
Ohio State
got blown out.
Got blown out by Purdue. Quality loss comes into play.
Quality loss.
With one-loss
teams.
Right,
and now, do you think, too, though, they're human voters. Do you think some of the people on that panel are going to go, I don't want to see Urban Meyer in the playoff? Do you think that comes into... I mean, it's not supposed to.
Well, it has before, though. The first year that Ohio State... I know they won the national championship, but the first year that we had a playoff, they put Ohio State in as the number four. They should not have been. Remember, you had TCU, you had Baylor, you had a lot of teams that you could have put in.
Yeah.
And they went with Ohio State because of Urban Meyer. Your question is, does the offseason work against him this year?
Yes.
Very easily could.
Those are human voters. So if you're looking at it, and just like you said, you look at everything... And you got it all worked out, and you're saying, okay, so we got Oklahoma, we got Ohio State, and Purdue, Texas. You got a guy that got suspended, had problems with the program. That'll be a tiebreaker for me. I'm putting in Oklahoma.
It's hard to argue.
Yeah, honestly, they're you know.
To the same regard, though, again, if Ohio State was to win the Big Ten, run the table, Oklahoma, in order to win the Big 12 and run the table, they would have to beat West Virginia, who's number seven in the country.
Yeah, and so that should be enough.
So there's a lot of common opponents here.
There's a lot of common opponents. So that should be enough.
I would agree with that.
So again, we come back to controlling your own destiny. Maybe none of them do other than
Alabama
and Clemson. Yeah, the top three. You're right.
I think they're the only ones that do. And I'm going to throw one more scenario out there for you. Let's say, I'm going to go back to the original scenario. Georgia beats Bama. we can agree a one-loss Bama team would get in. Regardless if we think they should, they get in.
Yeah.
SEC champion, one-loss Georgia,
guaranteed
they get in.
Yeah.
If Notre Dame runs the table and they're undefeated, they get in. Okay? That means we only have two conferences represented out of the Power Five in the college football playoff. If the SEC was to get two teams and Notre Dame was to get in, we would have, along with Clemson, we would have the SEC and the ACC.
That's it.
That's it. There's no Big 12.
There's no Big 12,
Big 10.
No Pac-12. Because, well, Washington State, once again, what if they win it? What if they win the Pac-12? Boy, you don't think they're good enough to get in. I don't think they're good enough to get in. But they have a point.
Well, they may end up with one. They very easily
could be a one loss. If they run it, they're going to be Pac-12 champs with one loss.
Right.
And
I'm telling you, the SEC will get the nod. If there are two SEC squads with one loss, both of them will get the nod.
Over all of them.
Over any other conference champion
with
one loss. It will happen.
I agree with that.
And Notre Dame is the X factor here, because if you want change and you want an 18 playoff, the only way you get it is by an uproar. Okay, and there's no revenue sharing for an independent team.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're going to get all the money.
They're going to get all the money.
They get all the money.
How many Power 5 conferences are losing money if this happens? That's how you get an 18 play.
That's exactly right. The Pac-12, they're all going to say, hey, wait, whoa. We want that. What is it nowadays? 20? Is it $20 million?
18 to 20.
Yeah, because it started at 12 to 14.
It's up to 18 to 20.
Yeah, 18 to 20.
Mistaken.
Yeah. So those conferences are losing $20 million.
A lot.
That's a lot of money. They spread it throughout the whole conference. They seed it from top to bottom, but that money goes through the conference. And yeah, they're going to make a stink. So what if West Virginia, they're a one-loss team. If they run
it
all.
They beat Oklahoma.
They're in it.
They're right there. They're number 7 right now. They have a chance to play Oklahoma in just a couple of weeks. This is very simple. Again,
I agree with the 8 teams. I think it should be 8.
Power 5 conference. Well, I think there's some nuances, and we could have a whole conversation about this, because should the Pac-12, if Washington State doesn't run the table, they're going to have 2 losses. Chance they still go to the Pac-12 championship. Should they be in a college football playoff? Probably
no,
not.
No.
So how do you determine the 8 teams? I mean, that's a whole other discussion. But looking at the way it's setting up right now, if I'm a member of the Pac-12, Big 10, Big 12, SEC, whoever, I am rooting heavily for Florida State this week to beat Notre Dame. Not going to happen in South Bend. Don't see it happening on senior day. I'm rooting heavily for Syracuse next week.
That's a good team. That could happen.
Could happen. It's a neutral site.
That's going to be a test. Yeah, that's going to be a test for them. That's a good football team.
13 in the country right now.
Yeah, that's a good team.
And then USC. Like, if you are a commissioner for a Power 5 conference,
you don't want Notre Dame in
there. You do not want Notre Dame in there.
Absolutely not.
Because the SEC has a legitimate chance of getting 2 teams in, with Georgia being number 5 right now. And again, as we've talked about, there's only 3 teams that control their own destiny. It's Bama, it's Clemson, and it's Notre Dame. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They don't.
They don't. They all need help. They all got to have something happen. But that's a great point you make, a great point. And you're a big Notre Dame fan. They get all the money.
They don't have to share.
They don't have to share. And so you're right. These guys sitting there are going to go, whoa. I'm losing out on a lot of money here. And that conference wants it. So you're right. That could be the trigger to start, because the fans want 8 anyways. You hear it all the time. Nobody likes the 4.
No.
They like it better than a bowl. They like it better than the bowl scenario. They like the playoff.
I don't, but yes, the casual fans do.
Yeah,
yes.
Most fans are going to say, yes, we like the top 4 playoffs. We like that. But, you know, if you ask most of them, they say, oh, yeah, I'd much rather see 8.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the difference is because you see it with the tournament. And again, totally different universes, but everybody loves March Madness.
Well,
everybody loves the NCAA tournament.
You're
and
right.
The reason, because so many teams get in, they get to see so many different teams and so many different upsets.
And it's
so
good for gambling.
And it's good for gambling. But they want that in football now, too.
Yeah.
They see it in Division II. They see it in everywhere else except for here.
Mm-hmm.
So you're making a great point that might be the tipping point. $20 million, that's a lot of argument.
Well, and on top
that's
of
a lot
that,
of argument.
You're eliminating, and again, because of the SEC bias, which exists.
It exists. It's real.
Rightfully so or not, it does exist.
It exists.
Okay. If 2 get in and Notre Dame gets in, it is the worst case scenario for college football in general.
Absolutely.
Across the board. It's the worst case scenario. And if Notre Dame's undefeated, you can't keep them out. And if Georgia beats Bama with one loss, due to the precedent that's been set over the last 2 weeks, you can't keep Georgia out.
No, absolutely not.
So I think that they've created, the college football playoff committee's been very fortunate, because it's always played itself out.
Most years, it always plays itself out.
Itself
it works
out.
Itself out. You're right, yeah.
This year, it may not.
It may not.
It
and
may
there's
going
to be some upset people. And what you, like you say, if you want change, the best scenario is the one you bring up.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Big 12 and the Big 10 are going to go, whoa, we got one loss. We're conference champs. He's not a conference champ. Yeah, I know he's Nick Saban. I know he's amazing, but he's not the conference champ, and I am. We have the same record. He gets all the money. They're getting all that money, and we're not. So if you're going to make the argument, that's what's going to start it. You're right. That's a great point you made. That's what's going to start the argument.
And SOS has to be considered. A one-loss Bama team losing to Georgia, their strength of schedule is not great. It doesn't compare to Notre Dame's.
Not at all.
It won't compare to Michigan's.
I think they played three good teams all year.
It won't even compare to Georgia's.
It won't even compare to Georgia's.
It wouldn't compare to Georgia's. Look at the resume that Georgia has built so far this season. If they were to beat Alabama, the two don't compare based on where opponents have been ranked. I mean, Georgia has scored some decent victories this year. They beat South Carolina when they were ranked. That's similar to a Texas A&M team. They beat Florida, who's a top 10 team. They beat Kentucky, who at the time was a top 10 team.
And they're still in the top 15, I believe, Kentucky.
Yeah, they are. And they'd have to play Auburn coming up this weekend, actually, and then they would beat Bama. Their resume would not compare to Georgia. That's how change occurs. And as we get down to the final 3 or 4 weeks of the college football season, that's a very real scenario. We've got a break for a quick commercial. We'll return in just a moment. When we return, we'll talk NFL football. Again, you're listening to Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Auto Forum Studios on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. You listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
Back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Jordan Buscarini joined today by Vinny Rondinelli in the studios. And for this last segment on the show today, we're going to go more abstract. I'm going to talk about officiating in the NFL. Vinny, I was having a conversation with someone off of the cuff this week, on Monday. And I brought up the fact that the NFL has done a terrific job of protecting three quarterbacks in the league over the course of their career. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees. To me, these three active quarterbacks in the league have been protected during the course of their NFL career. More so Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, and this is why. How come you can't hit a quarterback below the knee?
Tom Brady got hit.
How come you can't land on a quarterback with your full body weight?
Because a broken collarbone for Aaron Rodgers.
The offensive rules, and maybe part of the reason why I bring up Drew Brees is because he's a prolific pocket passer, and today's rules benefit Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and Aaron Rodgers more than any other active quarterback in the league. We can agree on that, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, those are the three quarterbacks that the current rules today benefit. Two of those three quarterbacks, we have insane rules defensively. Now, you and I have had plenty of conversations about NFL officiating. Hell, it was, 3 weeks ago that an NFL official lost his job for the first time in the middle of the season.
And I saw that one live and in color. That was over a Chargers game. And I was watching that game,
And it was a bad... He missed.
Yeah, he missed a call. He missed a call.
You know, but I go back and, we did have a conversation on Monday about the missed call in the Rams-Saints game on a replay. Fake field goal. Johnny Hecker runs to the outside. Obvious call. They didn't reverse it. And there's been instances. We could talk Raiders-Browns. The Browns were completely hammered in this game earlier in the year with the Raiders. And right now, if you're a Raider fan, you wish you lost that game to Cleveland. You don't want to be 1-7. You want to be 0-8.
Yeah.
With what you have right now, you want to be 0-8.
You want to make sure you get right. Nick Bosa.
And it,
yeah, number one pick.
Look, they're done. Cleveland's finished anyway. At the time, it was a big deal for Cleveland. Maybe Hugh Jackson still has a job.
They won that game. They won that game, and the referee... And the worst part is they sent that to New York, and the head referee blew the call, too. That one was reviewed and blown. They did. They seen that one in headquarters and still blew it and cost the team a game. And, you know, they fired that guy... Again, the Browns, that was the Browns-Chargers game. We talked about this. The guy jumped off sides. It was a blowout runaway game. The Chargers blew the doors off that team. That call had zero bearing on the game at all.
None.
It didn't change anything in that game. And he gets fired? So, dude, and here's another one. So we've talked about this a lot, Jordan, me and you. You're a big Rams guy. I'm a big Chargers guy. So 2 weeks in a row, Aaron Donald's played an entire football game, and he hasn't been held once.
It's not possible.
That's not even possible. The entire NFL has tilted this so far offensively. It's horrible. My dad says all the time, it's like wrestling. It's all fixed. It's all for show. It's not real because they have taken the football away. You're right. You can't hit a quarterback because Tom Brady lost a season to a knee. You can't sack a quarterback driving to the ground because Aaron Rodgers broke a collarbone. Well, what are you supposed to do? You can't hit him high. You can't hit him low. You can't dive on him. What can you do? You know, defensive players have been calling out, telling the NFL, what do we do here? The Charger game last week, the game's basically over. Russell Wilson runs around, throws the ball, gets hit clean. Melvin Ingram hits him, doesn't dive on him, pulls his arms back, roughing the passer, 15 yards, puts him right back in the football game. Last play of the game, you have a contested ball. They call it a PI. Maybe it was PI. I didn't think it was PI, but the game was over. It was fourth and goal. Time had run out, and now they get an untimed down at the one-yard line. They could have changed the entire game. The officiating and the NFL has tilted this so far offensively, it's hard to watch.
Is it tilted for all quarterbacks? And this is the reason I'm asking this. Baker Mayfield says, not so much. Here's a quote from Baker Mayfield. He said, "It's very surprising. I prepared for Sunday's home game against the Atlanta Falcons, and it's funny to see some of the referees chit-chat with guys on the field. I don't know. I think as the years go on, we'll get better relationships, and we'll see how it goes, and we improve as a team." What I take from that is he's saying that quarterbacks on good teams get more calls than quarterbacks on bad teams. And again, that's why I point to Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and Tom Brady. Throughout the majority of their career, they have been on good teams. Very rarely have we seen any of those three quarterbacks. And look, they're not the only three. Peyton Manning, same situation. How often did we see Peyton on a bad football team? Is there some truth to what Baker Mayfield is saying here?
Yeah, absolutely, and I can see that because my hero, Rivers, I argue with people all the time. He's as good as anybody else. He's as good as anybody in the league, and he's been on a lot of bad football teams throwing to people that nobody even knew who they were, and you don't get as many calls. It's true. You know, and it's the NBA thing. You know, does Jordan get more free throws than, you know, Brian Russell?
Sure.
Yeah, well, you know, you get that. But you're right. Those rules have scared. And I think it's everybody now. I mean, you've seen the Clay Matthews earlier in the year, 2 weeks in a row, with horrible calls that cost the Packers.
Yeah, bad calls.
They were horrible calls.
But again, that wasn't, going back to what Baker Mayfield says, and I don't know if you saw the play, but when they lost to the Chiefs, he had to miss the final three plays of the third quarter because Rod Parker hit him in the helmet as a defensive tackle sacked him. And Baker Mayfield had to miss the final three plays of the quarter, and there was no flag.
No flag.
And so it's the inconsistencies. And that's why I'm glad you bring up the Clay Matthews deal at the beginning of the season, because there were two legitimate plays. Clay Matthews, he couldn't have done it any better.
That was perfect.
It was textbook. He made sure he rolled the quarterback over. His body weight wasn't on the quarterback. He wrapped him up. It was textbook, and there were flags being thrown. Okay, so there's inconsistencies throughout the board. And I guess the big question I have is, with the rules that have been in place, is this just the way it's going to be from now on?
I think so. I think the NFL has made a conscious effort to say that we want to protect quarterbacks and we don't want defense to be a part of it. I mean, you can't really, even if you're a defensive back, when you want some guy runs an in route, Jordan, how do you tackle him? Example again, Derwin James is going to be maybe rookie of the year this year. Defensive rookie of the year.
Probably should be.
Guy runs in and around. He comes in, lowers his shoulders, hits him with the shoulder, hits the guy clean in the shoulder. The guy drops the football. Perfect football play. Just how you draw it up. Three flags come flying in from every angle. Unnecessary roughness. First off, there should never be an unnecessary roughness penalty during live football. An unnecessary roughness penalty is an after the play call. I have a real problem with that. If you have a live football play, somebody goes up for a ball, they make a tackle, and you call that unnecessary roughness, and they use the word, really drives me nuts, defenseless. Mm-hmm. Those are highly conditioned, well-paid athletes wearing pads. Defenseless has nothing to do with it on the field during the play. That's a word that should not be used. Now, I'm not talking about post dead ball penalties. I'm not talking about out-of-bound penalties. When a guy goes up for a football, he is not a defenseless player. He's a well-conditioned, well-paid athlete wearing pads.
Well,
going up for a football.
To that point, and again, how the rules are they've been tilted so far in favor of the offense. Say you have a safety coming in off a blitz and he gets picked up blindsided by a tight end. Is he defenseless?
Yeah. By rule.
He's defenseless.
Yeah, by
right?
rule. But that's not a penalty.
But he plays defense.
Yeah. And so they don't say that's a penalty.
It's inconsistent.
You're right, and there's a lot of uproar now in the NFL. You can see it with fans. They're having a hard problem with this, that every game's just who has the ball last. Really? A lot of these games are coming down to who has the ball last.
Right.
Because you can throw the ball up with your eyes closed, and it's 3rd and 26, and they'll, well, we had illegal contact before the pass was thrown across the field. It had nothing to do with the football play, and now you have 1st and 10.
Are we diminishing the role of a defensive pass rusher? And you and I have had the conversation that, number one, it's your quarterback. Number two, it's not your left tackle. It's not your running back. It's not your wide receiver. It's your pass rusher. That's why we've seen Khalil Mack get a record deal just days after Aaron Donald got a record deal, because they get back. They apply pressure.
It's the only way to stop them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only way to stop them is if you kind of fall on them and not roll on them and hope that you're above the knee, below the throat, and hope you don't get a flag. That's the only way you can stop a team now is if you sack them.
Got to throw them down.
Or just hold them.
I
think we're at the point where they just bear hug them and just scream, blow the whistle, please. Blow the whistle.
Dead ball.
Dead ball.
Stop.
Because, I mean, what else can you do? So, yeah, dude, the NFL's, it's hard to watch some weeks. And like you said, I mean, you know, they talk about what a great game that was, the Rams and Saints. There was no defense at all. They had 1,100 yards.
Right.
And you're going to tell me there's no way that Aaron Donald goes 2 entire football games.
Without being
just like, that's a point you made and your dad to me. There's no way.
It's not possible.
And it's not possible. That's illogical.
And let me throw 2 more quarterbacks out there, and I can somewhat relate this to what we're going to see tomorrow. 2 quarterbacks, like him or not, that do not get the benefit of the doubt. Listen, Cam Newton takes some brutal hits. Big guy, runs the football. He's taken some brutal hits in his career. Ben Roethlisberger has taken some brutal hits in his career. I don't care what anyone tells me. You cannot convince me that the same logic is applied to Cam Newton and Ben Roethlisberger as it is to Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. You can't convince me otherwise. I've seen too much of it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I've seen Cam Newton get knocked silly, helmet-to-helmet hits, no flags. I've seen someone land on Tom Brady, 15-yard penalty. I've seen someone land on Aaron Rodgers, 15-yard penalty. I've seen Ben Roethlisberger get knocked senseless, no flag.
In the most physical division.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Two very physical divisions, especially Roethlisberger. He's played some great defensive players.
Fair assessment?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the inconsistencies of the NFL and the officiating. Love the sport. I'm going to watch you every week.
Me too. And we're all going
to,
yeah. But
from a fan perspective, it's got to be frustrating.
It's tough. It's tough because you watch the game and you hold your breath. It could be 3rd and 17. You could play perfect defense. You got them 3rd and 17 where you want. And then you get a guy throw a flag for, you know, like rolling over on the quarterback. Or if you're blocked into him and you get, you know, oh, he got hit in the leg. So it's a 15-yard automatic first down. How do you stop them? I mean, how many points are enough points?
A defensive player can be on the ground and he can no longer reach for the quarterback's leg. Can't do it.
You can't do it.
Can't grab him by the leg.
And defensive players, and it's starting to hurt the NFL. It really is.
Because
it really is starting to hurt the NFL because people are watching the game. And, well, here's another point. Do we have time?
We got time. Give me one more point.
Here's another point. Me and you, we see things differently. A lot of the casual fans would say, you know, when they bring up the safety factor, they say, wait a minute, this guy gets a lot of money to play a game he loves. When he walks on a football field, he knows there's a chance he's going to get knocked out. That's it. But he gets paid to do this job. He's not volunteering. He works out. He's a, you know, well-conditioned athlete. This is the risk he takes.
It's not Rob Lowe playing in the Turkey Bowl. Remember that commercial?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's not what it is.
These are the risks they take. So we hear this all the time, well, player safety is paramount. Player safety is paramount. The casual fan doesn't want to see that. The casual fan does not want to see a guy get tackled and then have a flag thrown, and he's, you know, thinking to himself, well, what is the problem here? What, they're playing football. This is football. This is a physical, violent game. And these guys get lots and lots of money to play a physical, violent game. So I understand some of these, you know, head first, like driving into the spearing. They've already had that penalty. They've had that penalty for years. Mm-hmm. Spearing was been a penalty. So they didn't need to change the rule or do anything different. They already had that rule. You know, the roughing the passer now. I mean, we're old enough to know. Remember Tim Harris picking McMahon up and body slamming him on his face?
Yeah, right.
He didn't get suspended. He got a little unnecessary roughness penalty. And now you can't even literally sack the quarterback on most plays because they can't be touched.
Okay, so we can end with this. You tell me if this is where the NFL needs to go. We have these rules in place. And in the NFL, to a referee's credit, it is bang, bang, bang.
Absolutely.
Best athletes in the world.
Yeah.
Okay? Linebacker speed is insane.
Yeah.
We got
linebackers
like 4.4s now, okay?
Right. It is a tough job.
should roughing the passer be reviewable in the same sense that targeting is reviewable in college
Absolutely.
Football? Okay.
Every one of these 15-yard penalties that they throw should be challengeable and reviewable, and somebody should be held accountable if they get overturned. These referees, you did see the one guy get fired for an offsides penalty.
Yeah.
They have an offsides? It was a false start penalty. And then you got these incredibly bad calls. Every week we see it, and nothing's happening. And the problem with it, too, is technology's played a big part, too, Jordan. We can see it in 17 different angles, perfect, crystal clear. We can see every part of it. And they see it bang, bang, like you say.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the benefit of seven angles, slow motion. They don't have that benefit. So we got to take the human error out of it. Well, why can't we?
Because because at this point, human error is part of the game. But when you add so many nuances to a rule, human error really becomes part of the game, when it doesn't need to be.
It doesn't need to be. The rules have been, common sense has taken, we've taken common sense away from them.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. We are out of time with this edition of the show. Vinny, it's always a pleasure to get you in and talk football. And we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
For Vinny Rondinelli, I'm Jordan Buscarini. We'll catch you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Be safe. We are out.